Hey, everybody. I want to welcome you to the Free Man Beyond the Wall podcast. This is your host, Mance Rader. This is episode 97. It's gone up on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Evoox, YouTube. It's gone on my website, freemanbeyondthewall.com, and it'll be in the blog section of libertarianinstitute.org. I'll remind you again about my book, Freedom Through Memedom, The 31-Day Guide to Waking Up to Liberty. It is on Amazon. It is available paperback and Kindle. If you download it for Kindle, you'll have it in a couple seconds. If you are subscribed to Kindle Unlimited, you can read it for free. Today's a solo episode. I didn't plan an interview because it's been a while since I did a solo episode, and I actually have something to say this week. I've been going back and reading Rothbard. I had Scott Horton had recommended an article, quote unquote, which turned out to be almost like a research paper. And then I went back and started reading some other things and basically reviewing some stuff that Rothbard had written. But one article in particular, it's called Left and Right Prospects for Liberty. It's from 1965, I believe. He talks about conservatism, and basically he talks about the founding of libertarianism. And I've heard somebody that I like, somebody that I respect, say that the founding of this country was born out of conservatism. That didn't sound right to me, but I couldn't articulate why until I went over this article and a couple other things that Rothbard had written. So I'll just start by saying that conservatism classically is in no way has anything to do with the Enlightenment. We know that the founders of this country, no matter what you think of them, I'll get into that a little bit later, they were influenced by the Enlightenment. And the Enlightenment was not something that was conservative. They were looking way beyond. So one of the problems I have with the modern conservative is that he's always at war. And mind you, there's always threats, but it's a short-term attitude. And the short-term attitude that the conservative has doesn't allow him to look past what the next election cycle is. So we need to be able to look into the future and see what we want to see. But in conservatism, you're not doing that. Right now, conservatives are worried, will Donald Trump get reelected? Will the House be lost later this year? And it's all these short-term things, which are, if you're in that world and you really care, it is worrisome, but it doesn't allow you to look into the future. And another thing about conservatism, you have to understand, and if you don't see this, look harder. Conservatism in the modern day is dying, and it's dying quickly, although they won't admit it, but they see it. It's in the culture, which there is no conservative culture. Yeah, there's some, there's a gun culture, there's this and that. But they've never been able to put anything into the popular culture. And the popular culture is where all the influence politically is. It's politics of just old, tired ideas and it's things like, oh, we need a free market, but we need tariffs. So it makes no sense whatsoever. People are abandoning conservatism in droves. Basically, it's almost like conservatism has been relegated to small towns, rural towns, fundamentalist thought. You know, you can even say WASPy, that kind of WASPy attitude, white Anglo-Saxon Protestant. The conservative is holding on to old world sentiments. Culturally, whatever. I don't really have anything more to say about that. Politically, there is nothing liberty-minded about it. Let's face it, conservatives are holding on to the state. They will fight for the symbols, like the flag. They vehemently support armies that invade other countries on evidence that wouldn't get you a hearing in a common law court. But you have to support the troops. Support our troops. Troops. Most infuriatingly, they worship the shock troops, the police, and will make excuses for everything from their organized theft, civil asset forfeiture, their invasion of privacy, violations of the Fourth Amendment, and stop and frisk, rape, actual searches on the side of the road, penetrating the orifices of suspects, and even murder. They trumpet the good cop narrative while all the while ignoring that if the good cop does even the least of the things that I've mentioned, they're certainly not a quote-unquote good cop. There are even people I see that call themselves conservative libertarians. This is blasphemy to liberty. Historically, the libertarian has been the enemy of central power, an enemy of wanting the culture to remain stagnant, an enemy of looking backwards. Libertarianism is also an enemy of pessimism. I confess, this is something I have. I still fall victim to it constantly. My newest book will be a warning to not only those parents sending their kids off to college, but to those that don't have the time to watch the culture as I do. It'll be a warning of the corrosion of liberty creeping in through the culture wars that have been launched from the finest universities in the land. It'll be a primer on what many call socialism, communism, but could rightly be called fascism without the nationalism. A lot of isms in there. Historically, what many would call the Enlightenment, which undoubtedly influenced, you know, what are called the Founding Fathers, was a left movement fighting against the right of its day. That would be the church, the crown, absolute monarchies, anything that sought to keep people in feudalism. Unfortunately, not 20 years after the revolution, they drew up the Constitution, which, while better than the old order of the things I just mentioned, centralized in a way the Articles of Confederation wouldn't and didn't. It centralized federal power. It looked to federal power. Historically, we can see capitalism's birth in places where the ruling power was weakened. Look up the Hanseatic League or the Confederation of the 17th century Holland. Where there is a loss of central planning, people are forced to innovate. The American and French revolutions, while not perfect, were the gateway to the Industrial Revolution. What Rothbard called partial victories for laissez-faire, and what he termed as the old way, transitioning from the society of status to the society of contract. Also, the military transitioning from the military society to the industrial society, the society of trade. Remember, Bastiat famously said that if goods do not cross borders, armies will. He was a student of history, and we would be wise to heed his warnings now that it's almost a given on the right. The tariffs are good and trade imbalances are bad. I'm not saying trade imbalances are great. I'm saying if you're going to complain about a trade imbalance, take a look at exactly what's imbalanced and see if you may not, even though you're not get, it's not obvious that you're getting the better of the situation, take a look. With this looking to the future of industry and contract, it was now clear that the man that was formerly settled into the caste in a society could climb out through invention, etc. This man was not looking back to a better time because there was no better time to be had. This man was looking to the future, concentrating his efforts in the present day. In this present day, I understand how people, when I say in this present day, I'm saying in this present day where we are right now. I understand how people may wish to hearken back to a better time. Starting a business, chasing your dreams in this age of overregulation, corporatism, and crony capitalism seems overwhelming to many. And yet, this holding on to conservatism, holding on to the belief that you need that central power there to keep you safe from the monsters of the world, the very power that limits your options, is what in fact conservatism is holding on to and is holding us back from. People forget that the dramatic increase in luxury and living standards in the last century didn't happen because of government, but in spite of it. This is liberal thinking. No one can make the argument that that's conservatism, looking back, desiring a power over you. No. Classic liberalism was looking forward and looking to keep the past behind them. So many will make the argument that conservatives desire a smaller government. Look, it's in their bio. The guy on Twitter, it says he's a conservative and he wants smaller government. Push him on it. How small? Standing armies? War on drugs? Militarized police? How about tariffs and laws that would bring jobs home? They desire most, if not all of it. And what is that? It certainly isn't libertarian. It's certainly not liberal. It's corporatism, strong central planning. It's jingoism. It is not enlightenment thinking. The next argument we will get is, what about socialism / communism? I agree it is a problem, especially when it comes to the culture of the college campuses, the indoctrinating of young minds, brains that aren't even fully developed. Some scientists say the brain is not even fully developed until you're 25. But let's be honest, is a lot of what you hear being talked about even socialism? Communism? No matter what you think of the socialist communist that calls for the abolition of the state, while, I mean, I'll admit they're woefully ignorant of economics and human nature in general, that person is closer to classic libertarianism than the democratic socialist or the conservative of the day. The democratic socialist or conservative is clinging to the state. They want central planning. And in the case of the conservative, and even in some cases of the democratic socialist, is strongly nationalistic. Now consider the limiting of free speech both sides endorse. The conservative hates any kind of protest of the military, police, the national anthem. In many cases, the democratic socialist will speak to shut down free speech. They want to shut down the speech of who they consider Nazis or fascists. Add all this together on both sides, and from the democratic socialist side, we clearly see historic fascism in many cases powerfully. And the same can be said from the conservative angle, albeit sometimes a softer version of fascism. Going back to conservatism, it's easy to see that this is not the path the libertarian, what Rothbard referred to as the true radical, wants to endorse. Maybe the argument could be made that you could ally with them in the short run. But for the future, if you are seeking allies, you'd be better off with somebody to seize the government for what it is, the enemy of progress. I mean, they called Rothbard the enemy of the state. And I've heard people refer to Rothbard as being conservative. Mind-boggling. Lord Acton said that liberalism wishes for what ought to be, irrespective of what it is. He spoke of permanent revolution long before Trotsky did. Gertrude Himmelfarb wrote a treatise on Acton, and she said his philosophy developed, and I'm quoting Gertrude Himmelfarb here, his philosophy developed to the point where the future was seen as the avowed enemy of the past, and where the past was allowed no authority except as it happened to conform to morality. To take seriously the liberal theory of history, to give precedence to what ought to be over what is, was, he admitted, virtually to install a revolution in permanence. The revolution in permanence, as Acton hinted in the inaugural lecture and admitted frankly in his notes, was the culmination of his philosophy of history and theory of politics. This idea of conscience that men carry about with the knowledge of good and evil is the very root of revolution, for it destroys the sanctity of the past. Liberalism is essentially revolutionary. Acton observed, facts must yield to ideas, peaceably and patiently if possible, violently if not. The liberal, wrote Acton, far surpassed the Whig. And I think anybody who's a student of history knows that the Whig would be, you know, the Whigs basically became the Republican Party, the party of Lincoln. The Whig governed by compromise. The liberal begins to the reign of ideas. One is practical, gradual, ready to compromise. The other works out a principle philosophically. One is a policy aiming at a philosophy. The other is a philosophy seeking a policy. Rothbard talked about why he felt that liberalism started to die in the 19th century, this libertarian wave that overtook much of the West in the 17th and 18th century especially, that started to die in the 19th century. liberalism died in the 19th century by abandoning natural rights and higher law. And it traded justice for expediency and immediacy for quiet stagnation. Does that at all sound familiar to you? Does it sound like an ideology that we're all familiar with? The argument could also be made that the theory of evolution destroyed immediacy because of it teaching the slow, gradual increase of social evolution. So, well, we just have to wait until evolution takes its course 3 or 4 or 5 generations down the line, instead of seeking it now, instead of demanding it now. In both of those, you can see the modern conservative and the fake modern liberal, both leaning more towards fascism than liberalism, socialism, or communism. I reiterate this. Conservatism has nothing to do with libertarianism. The founders were not conservatives. They were liberal radicals. Did they lose their way? They lost their way. In my opinion, they got a little power. They were heroes. They won the revolution. And it got to them. I also think that when it came to international trade and things like that, they just thought that centralizing would help that a lot more, where I see trade as being two individuals making a deal. Governments don't see it that way. And we can definitely see that in recent history, very recent history here. Libertarianism and conservatism are the exact opposites. They have nothing to do with themselves. Maybe there's some crossover. But like my friend, who I'm sorry, I cannot agree with you on this. The founding was born out of conservatism. You know, conservatism was looking to the past, and the founders weren't doing that. The libertarian is the radical, and I would urge you to embrace that. In my opinion, libertarian means anarchist, voluntarist, anarcho-capitalist, whatever you want to say, whatever you want to call yourself. You know, the ones they look and shake their heads at, probably confused as to why they don't desire liberty as we do. When I just said that last sentence, it didn't sound like it made sense to me, but what I was trying to say is that those people who think that they desire liberty, they think they're all about liberty, and they think it comes through a piece of paper, and they think it comes through a government, I believe, honestly, deep down, the reason why they can get so indignant with us capitalists, us laissez-faire people, is because they want to be us. They're just scared. They're scared to make the leap. The leap from minarchist, conservative, you know, I mean, it's not a small leap. It's actually a huge leap. When you take into consideration the history of conservatism and what conservatism is, a desiring of the old ways, that's not what we want. I just finished listening to Dave Smith's most recent podcast, and he was addressing somebody in his private group that his private Facebook group that was just down, was, you know, didn't see any way that we could ever achieve the things we want. And, you know, Dave made the point that when it comes right down to it, most of the West lives by the NAP, lives by the non-aggression principle. Anyone who doesn't is an outlier. Anyone who doesn't is a criminal. And that includes the politicians. Dave said that he honestly believed that we could see anarcho-capitalism in our lifetime. People have to desire it. Part of the reason for doing this podcast, because I know people who are going to listen to it are going to they're going to be so set in their ways. They're going to think I'm insane. They honestly believe that at one time they may have called themselves a libertarian conservative. But search for it. Listen. Just think about it. Listen to the voice talking to you. There is nothing libertarian about conservatism. anyone who desires a state anyone who desires central planning shouldn't be allowed to use it. I mean, they can do whatever they want. You know, I'm going to pass a law. I'm just saying it's a misnomer. If you desire a state, even a sliver of it, you're not a libertarian. A libertarian is not looking back. A libertarian is not looking for the old way of doing things. A libertarian is looking to the future. A libertarian thinks about what the world would look like if Tesla was allowed to make commercial, you know, put out into the public and make commercial all the things that he invented. Right now, where I'm sitting behind me are three patents of, you know, Tesla inventions. And I know he didn't really care about patents. He said he didn't mind if anybody stole it as long as he made it better. He just cared about progress. How can you care about progress if you're looking back? The only reason, in my opinion, that you should be looking back is to look back to learn. Learn what not to do. Or to look back at the people whose shoulders you're standing on and look and see what they wrote. And see how you can take it and you push it. You can take it and look towards the future, like I'm doing with this article that Rothbard wrote in 1965, 52 years ago. 53 years ago. There is nothing libertarian about conservatism. They are the exact opposites. I dare to say that you libertarians, if you look at the original anarchists from the 19th century who call themselves communists or socialists, we have a lot in common with them, especially the fact that the state, they saw no use for the state, and they saw the state as, you know, slavery, basically. And like I said earlier, I mean, they're woefully wrong on economics, and I would love to give them, you know, their society so that they could do their anarchy thing with, you know, and watch the economic calculation problem just absolutely decimate them. You know, just so that it could be proven wrong. But yeah, it's sad that just because they have their economics is fucked up and it's been tried, but not really, because I mean, which one of them didn't have a central, you know, which one of them wasn't centralized? Forgetting about all that, they understand what the problem is. I would dare to say I have more in common with the early anarchists and even the ones that call themselves socialists than I do with any conservative that has ever lived. Because I see what the problem is. They saw what the problem is. I believe that my answer to it is workable. I don't believe theirs is. I think I'm just going to end it there. I can't wait to hear the comments on this, because I don't think most people have heard arguments like this before. I believe that there are people listening to this who actually believe that the founders were conservative. I remember one time someone said that to Michael Malice and on Twitter. That the founders, you know, the founding was a conservative movement, and he like just had crying his eyes out, laughing emojis, and just dismissed the person. And I looked at it, and I'm like, yeah, that doesn't sound right, but I couldn't articulate it until I was able to look back and read some Rothbard, and then Rothbard's writings triggering things in my mind about what we're doing. And as ANCAPs, anarchists, voluntarists, where do we want to go? I'll leave you with that question. All right. I'm not even going to plug my book here. Y'all know it. So I will be back later this week with another podcast. I hope you're having a good weekend. Take care. Bye.